You are now listening to the Trebla Art Podcast. What's up, everybody? It's Albert Gonzalez. Today's episode, I invited my good friend, Matt Tummelson. Those of you that might not be too familiar with his work, probably already seen his work if you've been on the St. Mary's Strip, if you're partying pretty hard, which everyone does on the Strip, you probably already stopped to take a picture with his infamous King George.
Yeah. King George slash mural. George Bush.
Yeah.
If you've had too much to drink at St. Mary's.
True. So, Matt, we met almost a year ago, or no, probably a little bit
almost exactly a year ago.
Yeah, so we met about a year ago. You had reached out to me about, you know, just talking about like studio spaces, because you were interested in getting into the Houseman Millworks, or I guess like tell the people about who you were, and I think you probably have a better idea of how things kind of worked out and how we met.
Well, I just had a kid, which you're about to, so you kind of empathize with this, but I just had a kid and I was trying to work from my home studio, and I was looking for a place outside of the house to work, and I saw the Millworks. I was kind of familiar with it a little bit, but I just didn't know. I was like kind of apprehensive, you know, about is it really worth, you know, having somewhere. And so I reached out to you. You were, you know, one of the San Antonio artists that I'd heard of and had seen around town. I'd seen your murals and your Wabi Sabi stuff, and so I was like, I don't know, like I'll slide into your DMs, is that what the kids say?
Yeah.
And then and you got back with me, and I was like, yeah, it seems like pretty cool place. So yeah, I was real happy with Millworks and everything. So
yeah, so now you've been there for about a year, I think. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of months after we met, because you reached out to me, we had lunch, we went to, what was the name of the restaurant?
Garcia's, man.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you took me to Garcia's.
Plug in there, man.
Yeah, so if you've never been to Garcia's, that's where me and Matt had lunch, and that's where we kind of talked about what we do, what I do, and got to know each other a lot better. Funny thing too, right across the street, you have a mural on the second floor of the building right across the street from Garcia's.
Yeah, that's how I found out about Garcia's. I went up there and I was painting, it's like March or something. I was up there painting this mural, and then I went and ate lunch at Garcia's and had like two helpings of brisket tacos.
Yeah.
And then
the enchiladas were pretty bomb too. I think that's what I ate when we went there. So those enchiladas were...
Yeah, don't try to paint a mural after you eat too many of them, though, man.
I kind of... I've done that before, working on the Burger Culture murals that are inside, and the Spurs mural, too. That's right outside. But the owner, you know, the owners actually own Southtown Pizzeria, which is right across the street. So for about like a month, I was practically living inside Burger Culture, because I was doing all, you know, all those different murals inside. And they would bring me over like a large pizza almost every day. And I remember one night I didn't even sleep. And, you know, I'm there painting till the morning, and the owner comes with like this large pizza. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, like if I eat just enough, like I'll have energy to just like keep going. But the pizza was so good, I ate like maybe like three, like four or five slices, and I was just out, dude.
Passed out of the
yeah, I was out. So like, I definitely know what you mean by like not eating too much food.
Well, the perks of the job, though, man. If you get free food out of it, that's always
so
a bonus.
You recently started getting a lot of publicity on the murals that you've the murals outside of San Antonio are getting like a lot of publicity, and that's pretty dope, because I remember when I met you, you were telling me about, you know, a little bit about this concept of what you were doing. I thought that was like super cool, and then now you're getting like a lot of publicity. I see a lot of people tagging you in these photos and stuff. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird, you know, like building up your body of work. It's like, you know, you have to have work to show people, and like especially with the murals, it's kind of hard to convince somebody to let them, or try to convince somebody to let you paint their wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you do it somewhere like Rankin out in West Texas where nobody sees it, it's like, you know, you kind of make all your, you know, mistakes out there, and you know, I did the best I could, but there's a lot of stuff like painting walls, it's a lot different than painting other stuff that, you know, you kind of like earn your stripes there, and then come back here, and it's like, okay, good. I'm glad I didn't do this Cause in a city of a million people.
Tell the people about the one that I saw. The one that you were like, yeah, I'm going to put this one up with the officer and the kid.
Oh, yeah. So I'm probably incriminating myself. It's like this DPS, like state trooper, and he's like pulling over this little kid, and he's on a big wheel, and the little kid's like bawling, and the DPS guy's writing him a ticket. And I don't know if I told you this, but like the weird thing is, I get out there, and I meet the DPS trooper that's stationed in this little town. Nice. And he kind of looks like the guy that I drew just like off the top of my head. And he was like, he was freaking out. He's like, how somebody, they hired this like gunman to come in here and like just sketch me out. Like when I wasn't looking, like he was tripping. But I was like, no, I just think this is all, you guys all have crew cuts and that same look. Like,
yeah,
you all kind of look the same. But no, he was really cool about it. He really liked it, which was like, I was like kind of on the fence, like, I don't know, is this disrespectful or, but he was like, no, man, I love it. This is great. So,
cause then was that the person that, cause I know one of the patrol officers actually shared it on Instagram.
Yeah. That was the guy. I won't share his name, but he was a really cool guy.
That's cool, dude.
But yeah, he really liked it. And I was like, okay, good. Like I got family that's, you know, DPS. And I was like, all right. But I ran it by them first just to be like, I don't know, is this cool? Like, do you think it's funny? If not, and they're like, oh, that's hilarious.
Nice, dude. Oh, that's cool that it worked out. Because sometimes, you know, there's some situations where it's
yeah, like, I mean, like, you had your, Pop for President thing.
Dude, don't get me started on that. Yeah, but, yeah, that's, I think, you know, as artists, right? And I think as citizens of the U.S., you know, the whole freedom of speech. Like, I think a lot of people take it for granted sometimes that, like, we have that privilege, and I think when it comes to our art, it's a sensitive topic for me just because I was really upset during that whole situation. But it got me a lot of publicity, which was cool, but I wish it would have stayed up, like, if anything, but everything kind of works out.
I guess that's public art too, though. You know, it's one thing if it's in your house, but, you know, if it's on somebody else's business, it's kind of like, we're going to sell less because that's up there, but, you know.
How much less can you sell, right?
I don't
like,
know.
You have so many people that are, like, supportive and so many people that, like, you know.
It's like you want to talk to people. Like, I'm not, like, let's have a conversation about it. Like,
and that's what, okay, that was the whole concept, you know, when I brought up the idea, like, oh, you know, what if we put this? And, you know, this conversation happened where it's like, oh, well, you know, what if it makes people upset? And I was like, well, really, it should be about the conversation. Like, why Pop for President? Why, like, you know, what has Pop said or what has Pop done? But it was more on his, you know, comments, you know, about, you know, what he thought. And, you know, I don't know. People were just a little too sensitive sometimes.
That's art, though, man. Like, people bring their own, opinions and backstories to the artwork. And they say, well, it's this. And you go, well, that's open to debate.
Like, yeah.
That's your opinion. And, you know, your opinion is your opinion. But, you know, let's talk about it.
Like, but to be so upset where, like, you go and complain saying, like, you're going to lose business. You're going to lose my business because I don't agree with what this says. Like, that's...
I don't know, man. There's just such a whole, like... That stuff just blows over so quick. Like, people are just offended and then, like...
Yeah, forget about it. Next week...
Dude, that George Strait mural that I did, it was bizarre. Like, the feedback I got, it came out and George Strait sees it, right? And he shares it on his platform, like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And it was, like, crazy, the night and day difference between Facebook and Instagram. Where Instagram, everybody was like, oh, this is cool. Like, you know, it kind of looks like George Bush and, you know, it was... You know, like, it was mostly overwhelmingly positive where people are like, yeah, let's go take a picture. This is great. Like, how cool. Everybody's sharing it. And then you go over, like, you're riding high, and then you go over to Facebook, and it's, like, nothing but people just shitting all over it. They're just like, this is terrible. You know, you would have thought I came over to their house and, like, kicked their dog. And I'm like, dude, I'm sorry I ruined your day. I didn't mean to, like, but it was crazy just, like, how different it was, and I don't know.
I think Facebook has a lot of trolls, too. Well, not that they're all people just trolling, but like people are really quick to just like be negative on Facebook. I think
I don't want to generalize, but just, you know, looking at that little thumbnail picture, it was a lot of like, you could tell like people that take pictures from their camera on their computer from like down low, or it's just all double chin.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, this guy doesn't have a whole lot else going on.
Yeah, you could, I think, you can kind of tell a lot about a person's profile pic on there.
It's like, dude, and yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, so if you have, like, a profile picture on your Facebook, and you've used your webcam, and it's not that good quality, you might want to update it. Take a selfie. It's probably... probably helps a little bit better. So
I'm extremely judgmental that way. I can't help it. I'm like, I can probably tell.
What's today? It's like the, you know, the day and age that we live in, right? Like before, it's like, oh, you know, you actually shake someone's hand, and that's like, yeah, he's a pretty good guy by his handshake. Now it's just like, oh, the profile picture, it's like tells a lot. But then also the stuff that you post, and like, yeah, we live in a really interesting time.
I just try really hard, or as best as I can, not to like have somebody just do a snap judgment on who I am, mm-hmm, at first glance. And so, I don't know, whenever you see somebody, it's like, oh man, like I can already tell where you vacation just from 5 seconds looking at your picture. Like,
yeah, I try to keep all my personal stuff off of social media. That's and, probably for and them. Just keep anything that social media is just business. Like, it's a great resource. It's a great tool to use. Yeah, it's
awesome for business.
But as far as like personal wise, like, yeah, it's cool to keep up with friends and stuff like that, but I ain't trying to share, like,
yeah, all these. Well, I think that's where people get, like, wrapped up in too much. Like, for an aspiring artist, it's awesome. Like, people literally all over the world can see your stuff,
mm-hmm,
but, you know, likes don't necessarily translate to sales and vice versa. Like, likes don't necessarily translate to, like, personal affirmation, you know?
Yeah.
And, I don't know, I just have to keep telling myself that, like, this doesn't mean anything. Like, make sales, likes are pretty fickle, you know?
Yeah, I think one way that it's helped me is by reaching out to the people who do like my stuff. Because I think, you know, as business professionals, right, you're not just going to look at a like and be like, oh, okay, like, that's it. But I use it as an opportunity to know, like, in any sales, right? Like, you have your leads. And I see Instagram more as like, you know, if someone likes something, then hey, that's a potential lead. Like, if I could reach out to this person and make some sort of connection or build some sort of relationship with that person, this person might know someone, you know.
That's the good side of social media.
Yeah, that's the good side. But,
and you do a very good job of that. That's, I look at your stuff, I'm like, I need to like do more of that. Like, here's my stuff. Like, and not in a pushy way. I'm not saying you're doing it a pushy way, but just like, hey, like, it's one thing to like my stuff, but come on out. Like, come tour the studio. Come check out my stuff. Like,
yeah,
let's talk. You know, like, get the conversation going. And
it takes a lot, just a lot of time. You know, people might think it's easy, but it's really taking the time to really reach out and make those connections with people. If you have, like, a social anxiety, it's, you know, breaking that comfort and kind of getting outside of your comfort zone. And I think that's what leads to success, is being able to get outside your comfort zone, you know, numerous times where you could actually start learning more about, you know, the failures, the successes, and just evaluating yourself and using that information to move forward. But so tell the people about a little bit more about your background, like where you're from. And
so I was born in San Antonio, but my parents were teachers and coaches, and they're kind of transient by nature. They kind of go to wherever they can get hired on. And I grew up in a small town around Abilene, about 2,000 people. I guess I always drew and was creative, but I never really, I guess, saw it as an avenue to, it was never really a viable career, I guess. It mm-hmm. was always like, almost like a party trick. Like, yeah, I could draw, and I'm sure you're the same way. Like, you're probably the kid in school that, like, oh, that's the kid that is a good drawer. You know, isn't a drawer. And, but yeah, and then, so I graduated college in 2012 and moved down here and had a bunch of just random kind of odd jobs, which, you know, I think is vital for any kind of like artistic growth. Mm-hmm. It's like just get as much different perspective and, you know, get out there and make yourself just a little uncomfortable, get in over your head. Like, you know, you definitely are, you know, it, to me, it makes it more interesting to talk to you at parties whenever you've got some, you know, some cool things that you've done.
Yeah.
Yeah, so had a bunch of weird random jobs, and I think it was 2014. I was working with bullet casings. I was get my shell casings from a gun range here on the south side, and I wanted to kind of incorporate that into artwork as kind of a metaphor for, you know, kind of a controversial subject.
Mm-hmm.
But I started kind of tinkering with those and painting, and I didn't really have any idea, you know, what it could be, I guess. But I knew I kind of had a plan. I said, okay, by the end of this year, my goal is to get in a gallery of some kind, like have, like sell some of my work in a gallery or a store or whatever. And on my days off, I went up to Fredericksburg and I dressed in a really nice suit. And I went all the way, like all these galleries that were way nicer than I had any business being in. You know, like there's like $50,000 paintings, and I walk in.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to buy my stuff? And, but I went, I don't know, there's probably 20 galleries. I went to all of them, got shot down in all of them, but one, and they gave me a maybe. And I just hounded them, and I was like, hey, this is my stuff. And every time I produce something new, I'd show them. And finally, they gave me, like, it wasn't a yes, but I think I was just so persistent. I was like, all right, I'm there. Like, mm-hmm. I'll be here tomorrow to show you my thing. And they were like, yeah, I guess we'll be here. And I showed up, and they liked it. And then I got my first gallery. And then I think 4 months later, I had enough just kind of small jobs added up. I was like, I really think I can quit and pursue this full time. And I jumped in with both feet, and that was almost 5 years ago, like this month, I think, is whenever I did it. So yeah, and it was super scary then, but yeah, I don't know. It was.
So what was the feeling like when you, cause I think a lot of people get shut down when they hear like a maybe, cause we take that as like a negative, as like a no, when really a maybe is still, it's not a yes or a no, but I think, you know, I had a similar situation where the person didn't tell me no. They were more like, we'll keep an eye on you. Just keep us updated with, you know, what you're doing. And eventually it turned into, you know, a show in Austin. And, you know, now I might have more possibilities. But, like, what was the feeling like when they told you, okay, like, come in or, you know, bring some artwork? Like, how did you feel? How'd that make you feel?
I mean, it was like, it was whenever you get over the fear of being rejected, like you just have to get used to like just people rejecting you. Like, and once you realize like, oh good, like I'm still here, like my ego's bruised, but I'm that much closer to a yes every time I get told no. You know, whenever you do get that maybe, it totally validates you. Mm-hmm. Like it makes you forget all the no's. You're like, okay, maybe I am doing something right. And, you know, I think listening to feedback is definitely like crucial, you know, and
mm-hmm.
anytime you get told maybe, I almost feel like that's kind of a way that people say, like, I make them give me a definite yes or no. And I don't know. I think that whenever you like show somebody how persistent you can be, like, I think we're worried about coming off as annoying, but a lot of times it makes whoever you're trying to get your artwork in with, I think a lot of times it says like, oh, this guy is tenacious. Like, he's in it for the long haul.
Yeah.
He's not here. Just like, he's not going to be one of those guys that just stops giving me work after a month. Like he's like here and
wants working. He wants to be successful.
Yeah. Like, you know, and I think that goes with anything, not just mm-hmm. art, but, I don't know. And I think that really separates a lot of people. It's really simple, but just, I don't know. Just
have you ever read, a book called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Mm-mm.
Well, you know, the whole, you know, not taking no for an answer and being tenacious, being persistent. There's a part of the book where, you know, this guy wants a position and, or this girl wants a position and they teller no like over 8 times, but you know, the 9th time, they're like, all right, come in, work for us. It's like, you know, you, if you quit,
I mean, don't you want that person on your side? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. That's, and a lot of times galleries would say stuff or like, you know, like, that's kind of a cheap frame, or, you know, this looks kind of shoddy, or like, this doesn't really meet our level of whatever. And, you know, it sucks, and you're like kind of mad, and you're like, but once you like kind of take that and look at it from their perspective, you're like, okay, I can use this. Mm-hmm. If I fix these little things, then, you know, I could, like, then they can consider me. But
yeah,
you know, that's part of it, just having something to aim at, you know.
Mm-hmm. Like, always just changing it up and reevaluating.
Yeah, just, you know, it's one thing if you're like, I just don't know why nobody likes my work. But if somebody can give you some concrete examples of what you can do to change, it's like, all right, great. And mm-hmm. I changed that, and, you know, I'm that much closer to selling. And I don't know. I guess you got to kind of be careful. You know, you don't want to change up your voice. But yeah, I guess I'm speaking more of just presentation-wise, which I think a lot of galleries look at, like, is this thrown together or is it, like,
really
crafted?
Yeah, that's true. So you're saying how you started working with the bullet casings, and how long have you been doing that for?
So I guess probably summer 2010, 2011 maybe.
Okay.
I was going to school up in Lubbock, and my uncle's the one that actually owns the gun range. And I'm really, like, at the time especially, I wasn't a gun person at all. Like, mm-hmm. despite having grown up where I did, like, I was like, you know, I was around it, but I wasn't
into it.
Yeah, like, it just wasn't, like, you know, like, my family didn't own guns. And so I was like, I'd go, but it was mostly just to go hang out and drink beer, kind of,
yeah,
you know, just be a part of it. So you weren't sitting at home. But so he calls me. It's like, hey, you know, if you want a summer job, you know, I know you don't know much about guns. We're going to give you the outside job cleaning stuff and, you know, the grunt labor guy. I was like, that's fine. And so I started working, and at the gun range, whenever, you know, there's these bays and people shoot, and then underneath the bay, there's these grates, and the shell casings, whenever you fire a pistol, the shell casing comes off and it lands underneath there. And it was my job to, like, go scoop all this stuff up. And so I kind of saw my own vision of firearms, like, changing, like, sort of my perspective of them being this, you know, dangerous, you know, like, scourge on society. And then to kind of see people come in and, like, okay, well, these are people that are responsible gun owners, and they're very, very extremely careful with it, and they're showing their kids how to shoot these things in responsible ways. Then you also have people that are like, oh yeah, we need stricter gun laws for that guy in particular. And then, you know, you get, like, tourists that come in too, want to do the whole Texas thing, and so you, like, kind of get their perspective of, like, how firearms are seen throughout the world, which is kind of cool. And so I just thought it was interesting that, like, you take, like, this one little piece of brass, and it, like, it can evoke so many, like, this whole range of emotions just based on your background and where you're from and your experience around it. And so initially I was kind of playing around trying to figure out what would be a good way to incorporate that into artwork. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, like, sculpture, and it just wasn't working out. Like, I couldn't figure out how to make it work. And then finally I was like, well, if I laid them all flat, I could probably paint on them. Like, I knew enough about painting and stuff that I think I could paint on them rather than sculpt. And so, yeah, I think probably from the very first project with bullet casings to essentially what I do now, where I lay them all flat and paint over the top, it was probably a 2-year process. But
dang. So what was one of the first paintings that you did on the shells?
It was Quanah Parker. It was the Comanche chief, Quanah Parker. And I just got done reading a book about him, and it was like his story is extremely interesting.
Yeah, being Comanche myself, like Juana Parker is like not just for the Comanche, but just all Native Americans did a lot.
Yeah, and he's he was like not afraid to be violent, but he wasn't necessarily defined by it, which was kind of what I found interesting, is that he like was able to like have a foot in both the white man and the Native American world and kind of be fluent in both of those and kind of say like, look, we're not going to get screwed over like we have been.
Yeah.
But also like be a champion for Native American rights. And it was just kind of
the first Native American diplomat.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So it was, he was to me, it was kind of the face of being two things at once. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of why I thought he would be a good face for that. And so, yeah, that was the first one. I think I'm on like, I don't know how many I've done at this point, but it's a lot.
You got a number of years like the Wabi Sabi, dude. You're probably in like the thousands already.
Yeah, there's a lot of Texas flags in there that you paint. You have all these deep conversations, and then you're like, yeah, but can you put a Texas flag on it? You're like, I guess. So,
man, how many, like, if it's cool for me to ask, like, how many of the Texas flags with the ammo, with the shells, have you sent out of Texas?
I don't know. There's a lot of like homesick Texans, I think, but I don't know. That's a good question. I know for sure there's probably a dozen.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It keeps it interesting. Like when somebody always asks you for something different, you're like, hey, can you paint this on there? And I'm like, I'm usually much more agreeable like later in the month when I haven't sold as much. I'm like, yeah, probably. I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, got a commission today, actually. A friend of mine that I grew up with reached out to me a couple of weeks ago, and huge Raiders fan.
Huge Raiders fan. Wabi-sabi Raiders.
No, actually, a couple of years ago, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, my Spurs paintings were like really big. I think they still are. I still get commissions from them too. But it's been like maybe since the beginning of my career in 2015, like late 2014, where I was commissioned to do a football player or a football team painting. And
was that when they were talking about moving down here?
I think so. And it wasn't for a Raiders commission, but it was for like a Cowboys and a Steelers. But he recently commissioned me for a Raiders painting commission. And I hadn't done one in so long of, a football team. But I've had all these new ideas just kind of, floating around, where now I'm excited to kind of, take that approach. And, I was talking to him about it this morning. It's like, man, like that might be, a whole new avenue that might be successful. Because I think, as artists, we do what we like and we do what makes us, money, which, we have to, because it's how we make a living. But to try new things and to have those things work, it's like the best feeling.
Yeah. Whenever you're like, I don't know, I don't know if people are going to like it. And then to have those instincts validated. That's always a good feeling.
So it must have been really good for you when people like fell in love with your casings, especially, kind of being really like iffy about it. I'm pretty sure when you.
Yeah, man. Like anytime, I don't know, like, my family's always supportive of everything that I've done, which I'm very fortunate. But growing up, there wasn't any examples of... Growing up, I thought there was like five things that you could be. I was like, okay, well, I can be a teacher / coach, doctor, lawyer, work for the city, or, I don't know, be an oil guy somewhere.
Yeah.
And like, realistically, like, there's just... I didn't know anybody that made a living as an artist. Like, I knew people that are artistic, but it was like what they did when they weren't.
They did it more as a hobby.
Yeah. And so, whenever I got older and you start seeing people that are, they're not Banksy. They're not, these huge names out there. It's like, no, you can still be the kind of, you can make a living on it. Like, you're not going to be like selling out stadium type big, but you can still make a living on it. And so whenever you start seeing somebody like that, it's a much more attainable goal than, like, you know, than what you're led to believe. It's like, oh, I can make a living doing this, and I don't know. And you get some paychecks sometimes after you have enough of those jobs where you're just sweating your ass off somewhere, and you're like, holy crap, I made the same amount sitting here on my butt painting for 2 hours than I did, you know, after a week, mm-hmm. you know, digging something up, you know, like,
or helping someone else achieve their dream.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, that's like 16 lawns that I just mowed, but I was just sitting here doing something that I enjoyed doing, and it was fun.
Yeah. So what was that moment for you? Like when you sold a painting that was equivalent to like either a full day's work, or, you know, what painting was that, or what was that like?
Oh man, that's a good question. I know in 2013, I don't know, there's so much weird stuff that I did early on that I haven't done anything like since, but it was like this, it was like a Texas, like, pasture, like, bluebonnet scene, mm-hmm. but it was, like, kind of stylized, like, graffiti, and then I outlined everything in black, like, clouds and the road and everything, mm-hmm. and it wasn't unlike, like, kind of your black outlines in the Wabi Sabi, but I put it up on Facebook, and, you know, like, a friend of a friend saw it, and they were like, what do you want for that? And I was like, I don't know, $700, thinking, there's no way. And she was like, yeah, that's great. And I was like, oh my gosh. And she was in Houston, and like, I woke my wife up, and I was like, oh my God, I gotta go to Houston, deliver this thing. Like, it was a huge deal. And so I went, drove it there, installed it, which I would never do. Like, I was like, brought all my screwdrivers and hooks and everything, and I was just like...
And when you sell your first $700 painting, you go and saw that.
Yeah, I was like blown away that somebody, like, I called my parents, and they were like, you sold a painting? I was like, yeah, for $700. They're like, oh my gosh. It's like, yeah, there might be some money in this.
So how was your parents' reaction when you, I guess, did you tell them, like, hey, I'm going to do this full time? Or was it like, hey, what have you been up to?
Yeah, I don't know. It was like a weird... It was kind of like... I guess I just had to show them, I guess, that it can be done. Mm-hmm. And they've always been supportive, but it was... I think being a parent now, I think I see it a little bit better of like... They weren't ever discouraging, but it was more of like, we want you to like... have something to fall back on, you know, like, art's good, but there's a good chance it's not going to be steady, and you know, you just never know, so, you know, have your day job, but, you know, also follow your dreams, but have your day job.
Yeah.
And then once it got to the point where it's like the part-time job and the art gigs start piling up to the point where you're like, I really wish I had more time to keep, I'm getting behind on this artwork, it's taking me forever, and you start like weighing it, and you're like, I really could quit and just do this full time, mm-hmm. and make a living off of it. But, you know, you may only have like a month or so,
yeah.
of work. And, you know, after that, but it's been 5 years of that, you know, every month I think, oh, well, I'm going to have to get a real job. And then, you know, something comes up. And
well, it's cool that I really admire that you're able to balance both and get it to the point where it's like, all right, like I need to do this now, because, you know, obviously you want to do that. You want to do more of the artwork, but you also want to make sure you have a workload that's going to, you know, keep you paid and keep you busy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I had to learn the hard way on that one. But I it's really admirable, though, that you were able to balance that, because that in its own, you know, balancing two different lifestyles, because, you know, you got to management and
yeah.
work with people, and like, that's a whole entity on its own. But
to, I think that's what slows up a lot of people, and you're really good about like the business side of it, which I think that just throws off so many people. It's like, I just don't want to deal with but I really like, that's crucial. Return email sucks, but you got to do it.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of artists that are like pretty introverted,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you just gotta get out there and just talk to people about, you know, your art. I mean, just explain what you're passionate about. I think people pick up on that, you know.
Mm-hmm. One of the, I guess, I'm pretty sure you probably seen me post about the digital business cards. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I'm always, like, sharing with people that ask me for advice.
Oh, yeah, I've got one of those. Yeah.
And that's one thing I tell a lot of people is it's a good way to start a conversation, or at least finish a conversation when someone's interested in your work, is, you know, mention, hey, I got a digital business card. You get on a first name basis, exchange information. Now you got a potential client, and it helps you build those social skills and sales skills too. If you want to, you know, get information out.
And that's what I think we've talked about this, where, like, you know, there's the art classes, and you see people that go to art school, but they don't ever tell them the business side of art, which is, you know, a huge part of it, is being able to you can be a talented artist, but if you don't know how to get your stuff out there, or, you know, get it in places, you know, you're really out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I forget the book that I read, like, extremely early on. It was like, I can't remember if it was Artworks or the Mystique of Selling Artwork.
Is it an orange book?
I think that's Artworks.
Yeah.
The one I had is like this, he's from San Antonio. Crud, what is his name? He's like this good old boy, kind of like cowboy guy from San Antonio. Ah, shoot, he's got a street here named after him too. I'll think of it in a minute. But that was really good as far as, like, I think one of the big things I took away from his book was, like, set goals.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, have something to aim for. So early on, my first goal was, like, I want to make, I don't know what it was, like, 35,000 in sales. And it just seemed, like, so beyond my grasp. And then, you start looking at it like a business. Like, what do I have to do to obtain this goal? And then you just...
Kind of happens.
Yeah, you just have to aim towards it. And there's some days, you know, you're just like, I just didn't say no to any job, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Where they're like, can you do a watercolor of, like, I don't really do watercolors, but sure. Like, you know, or whatever.
Got to hit that goal.
Yeah, charity auction or whatever it was. And, you know, but I think establishing what you want as an artist early on is also part of it, too. Like, some people maybe don't want to pursue it as a full-time career, which is fine. Mm-hmm. If that's what you want. And, you know, some people want it as a business. And so, you know, you can paint Texas bluebonnet scenes all day long and sell them all day long if that's what you want to do. But if you're, you know, just establishing your goal is kind
of
like...
Yeah, because I think we both see, like, a lot of people that say that they want to execute a specific goal that's definitely fully capable of to do within a year, but then they're not really applying themselves or doing those little things to get there. They just kind of, I guess, assume it's going to happen out of thin air or something.
Yeah.
Get a lot of those people that are like, yeah, you know, I want to do this. And then when you ask them, like, well, what are you doing to make that happen? And they're, oh, well, I'm just creating art. But it's just like...
blow your mind. Like, yeah. Just do it, man. Like...
It's crazy. Well, so was that one of your goals within, like, your first year of, you know, doing your art full time? Was it to make that much money, or, like, what were some of your first year goals that you had for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the time money was my goal. I mean, it kind of pains me to say that now, just because I think artistically it's kind of rough to say that, just to be like, yeah, money was a driving force in my art. But I think the way I looked at it at the time was, you know, if I design enough t-shirts or whatever odd job it is, that's that much more money that I can put towards, you know, my real true passion project. And in the meantime, I'm getting a little better, you know, practicing my skills, and I'm getting paid to draw and work on composition, you know, it's bare minimum. You know, if it was a college course, I would be paying to learn some of that stuff. So it was kind of, that's kind of how I looked at it, is, you know, I'm just not going to say no to anything.
Yeah, I had to do that. One of my goals in my first year was to sell one painting for $1,000. It wasn't to make, like, X amount of money. I told myself, if I could sell one painting for $1,000 within my first year, I'll be pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think that whole year, like going up to like almost the end of the full year, I had sold paintings. I think the most that I had sold a painting for leading up to this one last sale right before the year ended was like $350. Well, then like in December of that year, I sold a painting for $700 with the bundle of, you know, four other paintings that the total ended up being $1,500. So I remember telling myself, I just had the biggest sale of my life, you know, at that time. That's, I was like, this is the biggest sale of my life. And I had sold a painting for $700. And I remember telling myself, like, hey, like, it's $300 shy of $1,000. Like, I wouldn't have even imagined. Like, I saw it vividly in my head, like, that I could accomplish it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it seemed so, you know, far-fetched that it was like, man, like, I'm probably going to almost be dead, you know, when that happens. But I saw it being possible.
No, but it's still a goal rather than just being like, I don't know, I just kind of want to sell some art. It's like, I want to sell this specific amount. And then whenever you get it, then you go, okay, what's the next one?
Yeah, so that I had to reevaluate. Like, even though I got close to it, I told myself, okay, well, if I could get close to 1,000 next, like going into 2016, I want to sell one painting for 2,000. And, you know, always reevaluating yourself and setting goals that you know you could exceed. Like, you don't want to set goals that are, like, impossible, which is cool to do that, too. But you also want to exceed goals that are, like, you know, doable. But yeah, instead of just doing them, like, exceed them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, just setting the goal is, like, part of it. But yeah, set, like, you know, like, don't make it easy on, like, not easy, but just give yourself something to, like, break a sweat, you know,
mm-hmm,
to get to. And I think doing that, you're like, you grow.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man.
So what are some of your next projects or next shows that you have coming up?
So I'm at the Impact Guild right now. I've got a couple paintings up, some oil paintings. I'm trying to like really work on my oil paintings. I got a couple commissions for some brass canvas, the bullet stuff. Going on. I got a gallery that stocks those in California, so I got to kind of re-up on those. I don't know, I'm just kind of all over the place, but as far as here in San Antonio, yeah, the Impact Guild, and then I'm doing some stuff with the San Antonio Street Art Initiative. Yeah, yeah. And that's cool to be a part of, man. Like, you're there painting beside somebody else, and just, you know, I don't know. I feel like San Antonio is on the upswing. It's really cool to be a part of, you know, mm-hmm, just being that part of the creative flow in San Antonio, and people taking note and going like, man, this place is really cool. Like, I thought Austin was where it's at. No, it's in San Antonio.
Yeah,
man.
Shout out to the San Antonio Street Art Initiative. Sheck, Los Otros, the whole team out there, you know, bringing artists together and kind of helping San Antonio shine in Texas, because like Texas' largest mural or outdoor gallery, what they're saying, yeah, that it is. So it's, they're doing a whole bunch of really cool stuff. So you have your show at the Impact Guild that's up right now?
Yeah, and that's kind of appointment only, but, you know, reach out and I'll get you in. We'll go look at it.
Yeah, so be sure to reach out to Matt. And okay, so you told me you're starting to dabble a little bit more in oils. That's one thing that you've been working on a lot more. So what was, like, how did that come to be? Like, were you always working in acrylics and just recently you decided, like, hey, I'm going to just switch it up to oils too? Or
oils is just, like, so daunting to me. I just wasn't ever exposed to it. And it just seems so, like, you go down that aisle at the art store, mm-hmm, and it's just, like, all this, like, varnishes and these different things. You're like, I don't know, do I need peanut oil? Like,
yeah.
It's just so overwhelming, and I, you know, I never had an education, like an art education course of any kind, and so, I don't know, you just kind of get to a point where you want to challenge yourself, and, like, my eyes were crossed for, like, a good month. I started doing some, like, color theory stuff with this, his name's Phil Bob Borman, he's up in Fredericksburg, but mm-hmm, I just watched him paint, and he taught me some stuff over the course of about a month, and, my mind just...
And you went to the Capini, too, right?
Not too many classes. I took one class about a month ago.
With Tony Pro?
Yeah, I still need to pay him for that class too, by the way, if he's listening.
Yeah. Hey, no, but shout out to Tony Pro. That guy's doing so many amazing things too. And he's if you don't know Tony Pro, get familiar with him. He's like an amazing artist and he's doing amazing things too.
He makes it look easy and he shares with you. Like, it's one thing to be talented, it's another thing to be talented and able to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And he is an awesome teacher.
I think also too, with having a studio at the Millworks, you're like surrounded by like so many like super talented artists and everyone's always good with sharing information. Like,
yeah.
Steve DeLuce, dude, I learned so much from that guy. Like,
yep.
I always like giving him shout outs whenever we're talking about like art education, because
I was in his studio last week just doing the same thing, just soaking it up. So I was like, oh, I need to take notes on this.
Yeah, dude, and I would do that too, and he would stop and he was like, am I boring you? I'm like, no, Steve, like, keep talking. Like,
this is a TED Talk, man. I pay money for this. This is a college lecture. Like, yeah, he's awesome. Like, there's a whole group. And that's something that I didn't realize I was missing out on, just painting in my little, you know, extra spare bedroom at my house, is that cross-pollinating with other artists.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, there's a lot of good stuff whenever you... There's a lot of good stuff that happens whenever you mingle with other artists. And, you know, there's a lot about getting in with the Millworks that I look back on. I'm like, that was really... There's a lot of things that you can't really put on a paper that I've benefited from,
mm-hmm.
at that place, that I'm just like, yeah, just, you know, like talking to Steve or, you know, Gary Williamson next door. And it's like, you just kind of cross pollinate, you know, even if it's not somebody working on oils or brass or whatever, you just kind of like, hey man, I don't know, does this look good? Or how would you do, you know, composition wise, you know, you go talk to, Jennifer Crowder, or Monica, what's Monica's last name? Monica Saldana?
I think so. And Brad with names. But shout out to Monica.
Monica.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, just talking to like photographers, be like, I don't know, like, is this like compositionally, like, would you move this element over here? And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, it's just kind of cool. They're still creative and have an eye for that kind of thing, but it's coming from a different expertise level, which is kind of...
Shout out to everybody at the Millworks, and shout out to Rex Hausman.
Yeah, for Hausman Millworks.
Holding it down.
So
it's a hidden gem.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell the people a little bit about, you know, where they could find you, and social media, stuff like that.
Yeah, so it's Matt Tomlinson. On most of my accounts, Tomlinson is Tumlinson. Pretty unique last name, so I'm pretty easy to find. I try to keep up with all my recent stuff on my Instagram and just whatever I'm working on at the time. I got Tomlinson Art is my website, mm-hmm. and that's kind of like a portfolio of just a pretty good mix of everything that I do. But I try to, I don't know, just keep putting something new up every week, whether it's, you know, something that I'm doodling, which actually you recommended just keeping a notebook on you and just whatever it is, just try to doodle something every day. And I think that's been a good way to like be limber artistically, is like, you know, whatever, like, just
when you were in exercise. New York, you were going off in New York.
Yeah,
that was cool to see.
Yeah, that was I don't know, New York's a trip, man. That was
yeah, New York was crazy. How was your New York experience?
I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more in my early 20s, you know? Like, whenever you're, like, willing to just, like, sleep wherever and just, like, I'm just here experiencing life. And then I was good with New York the first, like, 6 days. And then the last two, I was kind of, like, I'm out of money, like everything just kind of had to, it was like dimmed a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. Like, the energy, like, you always hear was like pretty cool, but I could also see where like it would be a really cold place.
Well, then I think what was cool too, like, you know, you're going off on your sketchbook, you're posting lots of pictures of, you know, what you were inspired by, and, you know, it showed in your work and it was all very beautiful. And then, you know, towards the end, you know, we ended up reconnecting at the show that we're all there for, and you told us the story about the Impractical Jokers.
Oh, yeah, I forgot I told you about that, man.
I was super cool that you were able to like just see that happening. Like you see it on TV and you're thinking like, oh, it's probably all scripted, but like you firsthand.
Yeah, that was. Dude, so I told you like the first part of that, right? Like yeah. The preamble of the guy. I don't know. I always have these stories where I just talk to everybody, and for better or for worse.
Yeah.
And I think it comes across as flirting sometimes. I don't know. Like, I'm just curious, and I like talking to people.
Yeah.
And so, like, we're in the village in New York, or the village in New York, and it's, mm-hmm. like, late at night, we're in Washington Square Park, like, the epicenter of the start of the gay rights movement is, like, four blocks away. I just got done seeing, like, a great comedy show at the Comedy Cellar. I'm just hanging out. I'm in New York. I'm listening to, like, this band perform. I'm just like, this is a great night. The weather was perfect.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on this park bench by myself, which is probably a sign in hindsight. And this guy just sits down, starts making conversation. And it's, like, an hour-long conversation, man. Like, we go, you know, like, we talk about some deep stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, 45 minutes in, he just happens to mention that he's gay. And, you know... But it wasn't like he was like hitting on me. He just like was like sharing some personal information about you.
You know?
And you're like, oh man, this guy's opening up. Like you start seeing like the beauty and you know, just like, oh, we're all just human beings and we all just want to connect with people.
Yeah.
But then he's like, you know, you want to go out for a beer later? And I'm like at this point, I'm like, is this flirting? Like, I don't know. I wouldn't do this if this was like a girl that asked me out for a beer. You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, better air on the side. I was like, no, but thank you for, like, thinking that I was cool enough to hang out with.
Yeah.
And so we both, like, go our separate ways. I call my wife, and I'm like, hey, tell me if this is weird. Tell her the whole story. She's like, I don't know. Maybe he was just lonely and, you know, whatever. And, it, like, I was just like, yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of weird. I just had a weird feeling. Like,
well, you got to go with those feelings, though. Like, you just go with that gut feeling, and yeah, because
I don't know. So we ended up back at his place. Yeah. So like, 2 days later, I'm still there. I've got like 4 hours before my flight. I'm like, I'm out of money. I'm just gonna go sit at the park and watch people. Like, it's cheap.
Yeah.
Sit at the park, eat pizza, and just watch people. And I'm sitting here, and. So I avoided it for 2 days. I didn't want to see this guy. I didn't want to have an awkward conversation. Like, you said you were busy and you couldn't go have it. And I see him, and he's, like, laying out with this guy who's wearing just a Speedo. He's, like, rubbing sunscreen on him. And at first, I'm like, oh, good for him. He found somebody. And then I'm like, oh, no, he was totally cruising the park for dudes. And I feel, like, taken advantage of. Like, I was like, you know, I thought we had a moment. And then I noticed, like, he's rubbing sunscreen on this guy, but then he's, like, starts to rub, like, a lot of sunscreen on this guy. Like, a lot. Like, covered. And the sunscreen's, like, not rubbing in. Like, it's just white. And I'm like, that is way too... And then I start looking, and I'm like, oh, I recognize the guy who's rubbing sunscreen on. And I'm like, that's the guy from Impractical Jokers. And at the time I was on the phone with somebody, I was like, hey, I gotta call you back. I gotta take a picture real quick. And I go to take a picture... It was like the Secret Service. There was like these like perimeters, like these people with like earbuds in. They're like, hey, please don't take pictures. We're filming right now. It's like, oh yeah, I'm so sorry. And you start looking around and there's like wires and all kinds of stuff everywhere. You're like, oh, they're filming right now. This is crazy. Like I'm in the episode. So eventually, you know, they all pop out and me being, I don't know, whatever. I was, like, just in the background, just pacing. Like, come on, get on TV, man.
Did you ever see that episode?
I don't know. I hadn't aired yet or, like, I don't know.
Probably couldn't use it because you're all in the shots.
Yeah, we're going to have to cut all this. That weird guy in the back is... Oh, what's going on?
That's pretty funny, though. You get to, like, that story is something... You could tell,
like,
forever.
It's weird how small that place is, though. Like, just...
It's weird. Like, yeah. Like, walking a mile in San Antonio is, like, 10 minutes. But walking a mile in New York is, like, 30 minutes. It's crazy. It's weird.
But, like, it kind of, like... It really feels like the center of the world. Like, you can walk two blocks and, like, somebody see your stuff and that can make you, you know, like that's what was cool about New York is that like it really felt like, yeah, anything can happen here because like this is the capital of the world. Like everything that's going to happen is going to happen the best here.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's still crazy though. I think I missed my window.
Is there any like next trips that you have for maybe like you and your family or any, cause you just got back from a trip too, right? Weren't you gone for like a week or something?
Yeah, man, I was in Alaska.
Dang.
I was part of this. So my uncle that owns the gun range, whenever I first started doing this bullet thing, you know, I was like, hey, I need to pay you for all these shells that I'm using, you know, like it's brass, like it's material, you know, you could sell this and make money off of it. And he was real cool. He's always been real cool. Like, don't worry about it. I was like, no, I'm going to pay you something just so it's not weird that I'm always asking for this. And he was like, all right, well, if you sell, you know, this much, then we'll go on a hunting trip. And I was like, okay, sure. And I think he forgets about it until, like, you know, 5 years later he calls me and is like, hey, I got a hunting trip. And I'm thinking, like, all right, like West Texas, you know, like go hunt for something over there. And he's like, it's in Alaska. It's like, okay. What's in Alaska? What do you hunt for in Alaska? And again, I'm not a huge hunter.
Or something?
There's caribou, which is like a wild reindeer. But
aren't they huge?
Yeah, they're pretty big. They're like a mule deer. And, but I don't know, it was cool. Like, I try to be a yes person as much as possible. And so, you know, whether or not I was going to shoot something, I was like, yeah, I'll go. And so I ended up not actually bringing it. I brought a fishing pole and a bunch of oil paints.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
So, yeah, but we were out in, like, the northern, as far north in Alaska as you can go. And then we took a truck an hour from there and then a boat an hour from there. And we were just out in the tundra of Alaska and I just.
Camping?
Yeah, man. Yeah, they dropped us off and.
That must have been scary as hell.
It wasn't that bad, man. It was
bears and freaking.
I had like a big pistol while I was painting, but I hadn't seen bears in a while, and so
camping in the tundra of Alaska. You just say like all nonchalant. I guess I've been in the tundra of Alaska.
We don't have as much talent. You got to make up for it with like gimmicks like that. Like nobody's ever painted out here. I'm gonna paint looking over my shoulder for bear.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, we went a week, and it was so cold. It rained the whole time. The weather sucked. It was a great trip, you know, like, just for the experience. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd do it again for sure, but.
Did y'all get anything? Like,
we went with a group of six guys, and one guy got stuff. Like, it rained so much, the river flooded. Like, it was just kind of one of those type of trips. I don't think I've ever been on a camping trip where it didn't rain.
Yeah. But,
you know, it's soul searching, man. You do some, like, introspection. Introspective yeah. times and like I don't know, like that's long car rides. I talk to myself and yeah. like I don't know how. Where do you get your inspiration? Like, what's your like? Where do you do your best thinking? I guess.
Definitely here in the studio, or not like in my dreams. Like
really?
I've had like these really vivid, like the Wabi Sabi series came from a dream. Like
really,
I'm really quick to like wake up and like write. And sketch stuff down that I dreamed about. Like, I had this weird experience one day where one night I had this dream that me and Caroline were driving in a Ferrari with Drake talking about art, and we went to go eat at this place called Quadro. It was some, I think it was like Italian. And like, I remember the logo of this restaurant just being like really like crazy looking, and I end up waking up writing about this dream, sketching like this logo that I saw, and turns out Quadro, the way that it's spelled, this word meant drawing in Italian.
Whoa, that's really cool, man. Like,
yeah, like it was really weird, but like if I wouldn't have like just left that alone, who knows what that would have like. Like I remind myself about these dreams. Like, I have, like, journals and sketchbooks yeah. that are just, like, these rough sketches that I just jot down and, you know, turn the next page. But eventually, you know, what I'll do is I'll look through stuff, and I'll be like, oh, hey, like, it'll come back to me really vividly, and I'll be like, hey, I could, you know, do something with that. But with the Wabi Sabis, you know, this whole inspiration is coming from dreams. I had this dream of these colors, like, you know, I saw the Henri Matisse color cutouts in New York and Philadelphia, and the night we came back from my trip, I had this dream that I'm in the studio in the Millworks, and these colors start floating down from the ceiling, and they all float down onto a canvas, and when all the colors were done floating down, just like imagine the painting but without the black outline. So in my dream, all these colors are on the canvas floats up in the air, and I grab a paintbrush in my dream, and right when I'm about to start painting, I wake up, and the next morning I take Caroline to go eat breakfast at Blue Star Brewing Company, and we're eating breakfast, and I'm telling her about this dream, and I'm drawing on this napkin, and I drew the very first, you know, Wabi Sabi, which then I called it Sunday morning because I woke up Sunday morning and I, you know, drew this image from my dream, and it turned into like one of my most successful series, and I continue to focus on putting myself in this like meditative state before I go to sleep, and I try to get to this point of REM sleep like fairly fast when I go to sleep, and I try to get a lot of my inspirations from my dreams.
Yeah, well, I feel like too though, like just because it is kind of in your subconscious, like you're forever like trying to interpret like what, like what's the significance of it to me, like why, you know, like it seems like there's a lot that you can dig up and like explore, which is pretty cool.
I have so much stuff in, like I have so, you can look over there. I have so many sketchbooks, and Caroline's always telling me, go to those sketchbooks, like draw what's in those sketchbooks, like the Pegasus piece that a lot of people really love. It's like actually put away, but a lot of people love it. That came from my sketchbook, and there's so many more that are in these sketchbooks that are probably going to be really great paintings when I get to that point. But
but it is cool though, just like capture that little, like even like it's just like a nugget of an idea though, you know, and it's like, well, it started here, but that wasn't really what it turned into, but it just got my brain thinking about, but like if you can, I need to do that more, just write stuff down.
But that's the importance of the sketchbooks, and you know, I think especially when I told you for the first time, I was like, yeah dude, this helped me tremendously, but just by adding, you know, some paper in my pocket with a pencil and, you know, not being hard on myself with, oh, this is gonna look good, or
that's what letting it out from is like, I get so focused on this that I kind of, I want to capture the feeling, and like that's kind of, it's like I always assume that I'm going to show it to somebody. It's like, it's not about showing it to somebody, it's about capturing what you're thinking and the feeling before you get bogged down in the, well, is his hand too big proportionate to And so, yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, it's, I'm always curious where, like, I know where your inspiration comes from is always a real loaded, deep question, but it's kind of interesting, like, I don't know if inspiration is the right word, but, like, where you reflect on your artwork or try to figure out where it comes from, or, like, what led to a piece, I guess. I guess that is, in some way, inspiration, but I don't know. I feel like mine is usually a long drive. I'm just like kind of in a meditative state, watching the road, just thinking. Like a lot of times, I don't even have a radio or anything on, and it's just like, why do I think this way about this thing? And then just kind of think about that in your head. And I don't know. To me, it always comes out as a visual image. And I know, you know, like some people, it probably comes out as songs or writing or sculpture or whatever. But
so it's usually when you're driving.
Yeah, for the most part. It's usually driving. I feel like I can't do anything else. Like, my mind has to do this thing. I can't multitask, or, you know, I'm not tempted by TV or whatever, but it's just kind of thinking about whatever else, whatever's going on, or, you know, you see something that sparks and you go, oh, that's, and then you're off, you know, like.
I had a conversation with this one artist from here in San Antonio. She's an amazing artist. Forgot her name, but she has a studio over there off of Broadway. You probably seen it. It has like an eye on the building, blue eye. It's near Travis Maverick Park. Forgot her name, but we amazing artist.
On her names, man,
yeah.
I know exactly. Is it who does the? I can't remember.
But she's an amazing artist, sculptor, does everything. Well, anyways, we're talking about, you know, inspiration and where a lot of her good ideas come from. And she was saying that when we drive, were using a, I believe it was like the left side of our brain, because it's like a automatic, you know, process of, you know, driving. Yeah. So when you're driving and you're not listening to anything, it's like you're, when you're driving and you're focused on driving, but then you start having these conversations with yourself, you're unlocking the other half of your brain. So you're kind of putting like yourself
in one, like, entertained while you're doing the,
yeah, so it's like you're getting to this this state where like all these ideas are just flowing in between, you know, your brain, because you're going off, like, you know, your body is in this motion, like you see a green light or, you know, whatever, white lines, you're gonna just kind of just go off. And when you start having these conversations with yourself, or at least thinking about ideas, like, you're just using your whole brain, and it's a good way to just, like, unlock these ideas, or the subconscious, you know.
Everybody just always thinks I'm stoned all the time. And I don't smoke.
So you're just driving out, listening to music, just soaking up.
I'll call people with random questions, like, dude, what do you think about, like, are you high? I'm like, no, you know I don't smoke. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what I'd be like if I smoked, you know? Yeah. I'd be like, I don't know, you could get an adjusted mortgage rate on your, or, like, talk about cleaning out shit out of your gutter or something boring. It's like, I feel like I can get there without being there at this point. I don't know. I'd be totally off the deep end, maybe. I don't know.
That's funny, man.
But, yeah.
Dude, so we're going for 1 hour and 6 minutes. This is your first podcast, so that went by pretty. That went by pretty fast, dude.
Sorry, man. You know where you're going.
No, nah, dude. It's great. I think this is a great episode. So one more time, tell people where they could find you and your website.
Well, in San Antonio, if you're listening to it in San Antonio, you can see my work at St. Mary's. Mm-hmm. You got George Strait there. I've got one off Fredericksburg, the Sexy Davy Crockett, the Dakota Eastside Ice House. Shout out to them.
Yeah.
They're awesome people. I've got a mural over there. They've hosted some of your stuff.
Yep.
And Caroline's. The Impact Guild right now has got some of my stuff up. If you want to reach out to me, you can find me on my website, tumlinsonart.com. And, if you see me painting in San Antonio, just come say hi.
Oh, and plug in your Instagram too.
Oh yeah.
Make sure you tag them.
Matt_Tumlinson. And you can come talk to me. I'll try not to talk for an hour, but you might just have to break it off.
Tight. So once again, everybody, it's me, Albert Gonzalez. I want to thank you all for listening, and thank you for watching. It was a great episode. Matt, it was awesome having you here.
Likewise, man.
So really, if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's Trebla, TREBLA_art, or you can visit my website, Albert Gonzalez Art. And now also be sure to follow the podcast Instagram, which is Trebla_art_podcast. So once again, Matt, thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Appreciate having you here.
It was awesome.
And peace out, everyone.